When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Welcome to yet another sparkling edition of The Thought Police. I'm Mike Graham, you're Matt Kelly.
I am.
Good day to you.
Good day to you.
Now, as we are speaking about this, we are literally in the midst of the Sandringham Summit.
Yeah.
Right? We don't yet know what's going to emerge from the Sandringham Summit.
No.
But it's not very good, is it?
It's amazing.
I mean, you're the man, we should remind the listeners, who masterminded the undercover operation of Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
When you got a Daily Mirror reporter into the building as a footman. So, I mean, this must be bringing back some memories of the old royal stories you used to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I was interested in them. But I have to say, it's rekindled my interest. I'm surprised at how fascinated I am by the twos and throwings of it, because there's all this complication stuff, like suddenly, you know, the tax burden on Harry if he moves out, and can he actually, if he's not bilingual, could he move to Canada? You know, that came up this morning. He doesn't speak French.
Right. So well, the only bit of France that they care about in French-wise is Quebec, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, but you can't get a job, apparently, in Canada if you're not bilingual.
Well, what's he going to get a job doing? I mean, what job could he do?
Well, he could be begging for voiceover work for himself, like he was with Bob Iger.
Yeah, he could ring up that guy from Disney and go, do you know when we did that deal to get Megan some voiceover work?
Yeah.
How do you fancy
that
giving it to me?
That was mortifying, wasn't it?
Wasn't that the most embarrassing thing you've ever seen?
It was. I'll tell you, the thing about it that mortified me was the bit where he sort of leaned back and said, oh, you sound surprised.
Yeah.
Like, everyone gives a toss about what his wife does.
I know. But meanwhile, she's over to the right talking to Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Jay-Z looked bored as shit.
Do you think she was saying to them, hey, do you know my husband, he plays a bit of guitar?
Yeah,
that's do you think you'd get a spot in the band?
Backing vocals.
Yeah.
Jay-Z, I thought, I love Jay-Z. I think he's an absolute diamond. And he just looked completely pissed off at the fact that he was there. And I think he was there for Beyonce only.
Yeah, right. Well, this is the thing. I mean, this whole kind of woke world that you and I don't inhabit, and that you probably would be more comfortable in than me. But, you know, it's hard to imagine what it's like, you know, because one of the things that they're now touting is that Prince William and Prince Harry issued a statement saying, you know, it's wrong to write stories about bullying, it's wrong to use the wrong kind of language because it's very damaging to mental health and all this. It's almost like they're going to be saying to newspapers, you can only write things that we approve of.
Yeah.
You can only write things using words that we approve of. And here are the words you can't use.
Honestly, I
mean,
it's
unbelievable.
This will go down like a bucket of cold sick with a lot of our listeners. But the more you look at the royal family, the Queen is the amazing exception. Charles, maybe.
Yeah.
Charles has got a lot going. I like Charles. You know, I like the fact he's eccentric and he says his mind and stuff like this. But then William, who gives a toss? William's kid, can't even remember his name now. George, is it?
George,
I mean, really?
Well, he is the heir to the throne.
But really, are we going to be sitting here in, you know, is my kid going to be sitting there watching the coronation in 100 years of, you know, of George's child or grandson?
Right.
I just can't believe that it's going to go on much longer.
No,
really.
I find it quite ridiculous, actually, because I'm almost with you on that, except I'm not that keen on Charles at all.
Right.
Because if you think about where he came from and the kind of privilege that he's had all of his life. And but don't forget, by the way, the Duchy of Cornwall doesn't pay any tax.
No, that's right.
Now, why is
it's
that?
It's an outrage.
Why does he not pay any tax? I have to pay tax.
And the idea that the oft-quoted thing that they pay handsomely, they return what it costs us in tourism. I don't believe for a minute that we'd lose a penny tourism if they weren't there.
Well,
if you could walk around Buckingham Palace.
I suppose there is something to be said for the trooping of the colour and the fact that you get to see the Queen. But I mean, if Charles is sitting on a horse, I couldn't care less.
No.
Unless he falls off it. And then somehow you've got something to laugh about. But I certainly don't need William and Kate giving me... I mean, if it wasn't for Harry and Meghan, they would probably be quite irritating because they're a little bit on the woke side, aren't they?
Well, how would you feel, right? Kate Middleton, right? I mean, I'm not being a snobby, quite the opposite. But Kate Middleton, upper middle class family, mum's a party planner, done very well for herself, got herself into a university.
She used to be a stewardess, didn't she?
Yes, that's right.
They used to call her Doors to Manual, didn't
but
they?
But so the F what?
Right.
You know, I mean, who are they? So Kate Middleton walks into this studio right now. What are we meant to do? Bow?
Yeah, I know.
Doff our caps?
Well, that was one of the things that was always funny to me when I used to go and do some of the royal stuff in America, because if it was a minor kind of tour, like in the days before Charles and Diana, if Charles was on his own, the papers in London wouldn't bother sending, so they'd ask me to pick him up. And I remember I had to go to Pittsburgh once, where I ended up having dinner with Kate Ady, funnily enough, because she was also doing it.
Oh, brilliant.
She spent the entire night having dinner telling me how she lost her hearing in her ear because it was a bomb in Beirut.
Yeah.
You know, which was quite boring after a while.
Yeah,
but anyway.
you could get that quite quickly, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Right, next.
Yeah. So you could see in his face, he hated the fact that all these American journalists were kind of going, "Hey, Chuck!"
Yeah.
They were just shouting at him, which, of course, we're not supposed to do.
No,
we're supposed
to
wait for an opportunity for him to come over and say, "Would you have anything you'd like to ask me?"
Did you read that?
And they were like, "Hey, Chuck, what are you doing?"
Did you read that brilliant story about Prince Andrew? And I think it was in Pop Bitch. And so, God knows if it's true, but it sounded right.
Well, let's hope it is.
And this was meant to be after the Emily Maitlis interview.
Right.
So this is like in his period of deep shame.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, he was at a private dinner and he was the guest of honour.
Uh-huh.
And he walked into the room. And nobody stood up.
Oh, yes. Right.
And he went, let's try this again, shall we?
Yes.
Walked out of the room and then came back in.
In fact, I did read that. Was it not at some hunting event or something?
It could have been, yeah.
And they were all in his house or something.
What a twat.
I know, but this is the thing. This is what you forget, that these people are so ridiculously snobbish about what they expect you to do
the
around
level
them.
Of entitlement,
they genuinely feel
that
basically, you know, when he gets in his Bentley, in London, that all of the traffic should be put to one side and that he shouldn't have to worry about it and he should be given absolutely green lights all the way and motorcycle outriders because that's their life.
Yeah.
You know, and when you talk about Harry and Meghan going off and becoming financially independent, I mean, don't make me laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, these are people who have had, I mean, at least she's had a job and she has had to make the money that she's made. So in a way, I've actually got more time for her than I have for him. But he did go and fight in Afghanistan, and for that, a lot of people think he was a good guy.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that's fair enough. But, you know, they're not really qualified to do anything. He's not very smart.
But apparently his net worth is 38 million quid.
Right.
So what's stopping him being financially independent right now?
Well, exactly.
Go and buy yourself a semi in Accrington.
Yeah. He got left all that money by
live
his
off
mother
the
in a trust, right?
Yeah.
And he also now gets money from the Duchy of Cornwall.
Yeah.
And so his claim that, you know, oh, don't worry, I don't get any public money because I only take 5% out of the sovereign fund is absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
Complete nonsense.
Oh, no.
But what I find amazing, though, is the way that the kind of the woke generation of all of these kind of mates of theirs are basically saying they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Because guess what? The royal family's a bit stodgy and old.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You know, the Queen's 93.
Yeah.
What, I mean, it's a bit, I've likened it to a bit like you having one of those, you know, dodgy, it's like having Mario Balotelli playing for, you know, for Liverpool. And he's, you know, he's not very happy.
Yeah.
So in the end, you have to move him on, shove him off to some
other
team.
Harry might lift up his shirt and he's got a T-shirt saying,
you know,
why always me?
Well, it's effectively what she said, isn't it? When old Tom Bradby interviewed her and she said, you know, nobody ever asks me how I am.
Yeah.
Really?
Thank you, Tom.
And
you're,
I mean, he has gone way down in my estimation.
Who, Bradby?
For writing that lickspittle piece of the Sunday Times.
Well, he's just trading on his contact, isn't he? You
well,
know,
he's
he
tra- might, well,
imagine
he's trading,
if he lands that interview on
well,
the back
Well, he's trading
of
on his future.
Yeah.
Because he thinks that they're going to be his mates.
Yeah.
And that he'll be the one that gets the big interview.
Well, we know people who act like that and work on that basis.
What do you mean, like Piers Morgan?
Piers Morgan. Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about Piers is that he gets these interviews, but he never actually asks them anything.
Oh, I don't think that's fair,
no,
though.
I'm joking.
I know you're
joking.
Yeah.
It's only because he keeps promising to come on my show and he keeps not doing
it. Does he keep blowing you up?
Well, he doesn't really. It's not his fault. He's very busy.
Yeah.
I tried to get him on the other day, Because I said, look, basically, you're getting blamed for this. You know, apparently it's your fault that Meghan wants to leave the country. So. But he didn't fall for it, unfortunately.
That
but
would
some,
be no, so
some
great.
Some people are saying that.
Wouldn't that,
that
be great?
This is relentless kind of... Bette Midler, in fact, is one of them. This relentless negativity that you've been pumping out in your Daily Mail column has eventually led to Meghan Markle leaving the country.
How brilliant would it be if the entire British monarchy fell to pieces because Meghan Markle once blanked Piers at a party?
Well,
and he's got
that
the hump.
That would be his favourite situation of all time, wouldn't it?
I mean, if
Piers
he could,
in the centre of everything.
Yeah. God knows how he does it, but he does.
Mm.
Anyway.
But I mean, effectively, people keep saying to me, you know, oh, don't worry, it will all be okay in the end. I don't think it will be okay in the end.
No.
I really don't. I think she is a massive influence, clearly, on Harry. You know, he's going to leave the country at the end of this week. I don't think he's going to come back.
Well,
can you imagine the scene, for example, where Prince Philip, who's very elderly now and very frail, dies, right, and they don't come back for the funeral?
Yeah,
can
they'd have to. Even what's-his-face, the one who abdicated.
I can imagine that not being the case.
No, they'd have to. Oh, come on. They'd have to come back for the grandfather's funeral.
No, but think about how this stuff has played out, right?
Yeah.
He's with her for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
During that time, they hatched this plot, which I think, to be fair, they've been hatching for a while. But because they're together for 6 weeks, he's got no distractions, he's got nobody telling him anything apart from her, because she's isolated him from all of his friends and all of his family, right? He has a conversation with Prince Charles on Christmas Eve, apparently, at which he says, this is what we want to do.
Oh, right.
And apparently, so the story goes, Charles then says to him, well, I don't think we can just talk about this. Why don't you put something down in writing and tell me how you think it's going to work?
Right.
The claim, which was in Bradbury's column, in the Sunday Times, which obviously comes to them, is that that was then leaked to Dan Wootton at The Sun.
Yeah.
And that was how it all just kind of started
coming out.
That's right, but now that he's back on his own and with his own family and she's not with him, I bet you any money he starts to slightly soften his because he seems to me like a guy who's a bit easily manipulated.
Well, I mean, on a serious note, if there is a serious thing to this, his mental health has been called into question. And
if she is struggling with depression,
then people should open up about that. You
maybe,
know?
But I think I wonder whether some of that has been brought on by her.
Yeah.
Because she's the one who's kind of gone to him and said, you know, it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
And then
suddenly
you go, oh, all right then. Instead of just saying, would you mind? You know, and of course, we all have to take mental health much more seriously now than we ever did.
Yeah.
However, I think there's a lot of situations where people kind of talk about it and sort of, you know, give themselves the title of struggling with mental health when actually they're not really.
And it would have just been sadness 10 years ago. They'd have just said, oh, I'm feeling a bit miserable right now.
Well, when you start seeing people that say they need time off because, you know, they've broken up with their girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they need to have compassion from the company they work for. You know, you go, well, you know, things might have gone a little bit too far here.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, and lots of people have had tragedy in their lives. And, of course, his was very publicly played out.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the end, you can't play the victim forever when you are that wealthy, when you have lived that life of privilege, you know, when they've got servants doing everything for you. I mean, Charles literally had somebody that put toothpaste on his toothbrush.
That was one of the things that came out of the Ryan Parry story that we broke. Yeah,
right.
Was the extent of mollycoddling. I don't know. I think that, I mean, I remember Stan Collymore, when Stan Collymore went public with his depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, Stan had all sorts of...
He's a very complicated
character. Very complicated guy. But, I knew him relatively well.
Yeah, because you've told that story before about the book, right?
Yeah, and the dogging and all of that business. But he'd get himself into all sorts of trouble.
Yeah.
But essentially a nice guy who felt he couldn't say, I've got depression. And when he did say, I've got depression...
I'm not sure he's a nice guy, by
everyone's,
the way.
Well, I only speak as I find. But
he's another one that's blocked me on Twitter.
I see. The definition of nastiness. But...
people can't take it.
The minute he said, I've got depression, everyone said, including people we know and admire, pull yourself together, you're a millionaire, you know, all you have to do is turn up to training or whatever it is, you know. And that's, I think that does miss the point massively.
Yeah, but nobody does that anymore. I mean, if you say, I think I've got suffering from depression, nobody now have the cojones to say, pull yourself together.
But don't you think that's what people are saying about Harry? But in the back of our heads, we know there's a good chance he's probably suffering from some mental health issue.
I have no idea what he's suffering from, and for all I know he might have PTSD from being in Afghanistan. I mean, he was a helicopter pilot and he did actually get into some hot situations and he was in live battles, so you know. But I just worry that this whole woke generation wants you to feel like you've got some kind of mental health problem. It's almost as though you'd be weird if you didn't have some mental health problem. Right. And that, to me, in a way, it's a little bit like, you know, using the word Nazi to describe someone who isn't a Nazi, or using the word racist to describe something that isn't racist.
It just blankets stuff.
What it does is it diminishes the people who really are suffering, for example, from proper mental health problems. I mean, I've known people over the years who had proper depression, right? And they couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't just walk around and say, you know, I've got mental health issues.
Well, Alistair's like that, Alistair Campbell.
I mean, he literally, I mean, I, a friend of mine couldn't get out of bed. He'd be there for days.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what he's like.
You try and get them, you try and go around and see them, not interested, couldn't want to talk to anybody, literally lying down in a dark room.
Yeah.
The problem for me with people like Collymore is that Collymore, and I know this just because he used to work in the same place that I did.
Oh, of course,
whenever there would be some kind of massive row or he'd gone too far on Twitter, he suddenly found himself in need of a lie down.
Right, okay.
And then he would suddenly go into a dark depression.
Right.
Which would always save his job. Because instead of getting fired, people would go, well, we can't really
because he needs counselling or something like that.
He needs help.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid it became a bit of a pattern.
Right.
Until eventually...
Right.
They went, well, we can't, we just can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I get
people,
that. I get that.
I'm slightly sceptical of people who use it as a sort of shield.
Yeah.
To say you can't... I mean, like, if Prince William and Prince Harry's statement is to be believed and their relationship is apparently fine, in their words, which it clearly isn't, they're basically trying to issue instructions to newspapers to not use certain types of language, which is outrageous.
It is. It's got nothing... Well, the core thing to me is, why would anybody listen to those two guys, you know, on anything? They're not particularly intelligent. In fact, quite possibly the reverse. They you know, they are just overprivileged, self-entitled people who lived in a bubble
born
their whole lives.
Privilege, right?
You know, so if they can drive attention to a charity, fantastic. But don't start telling us what the terms of that charity should be.
Yeah.
You know, leave that to somebody who's actually got a clue.
Right. Here's something I want to ask you about, right? And I've thought about this over the weekend. Did you see... Because I imagine that you, when you were the king of features at the Mirror, would have had charge of this. And you've told us the great story of the guy from Watergate when he came over to write...
Carl Bernstein,
right? I want to ask you about John Pilger, right? Because I don't know if you saw his furore over the weekend.
No.
He had put a tweet out towards the back end of last week. And you know what Pilger's like. I mean, he's a massive lefty... massive anti-American, massive anti-war guy. And he put out this tweet that basically was talking about, you know, the Bay of, what was it called? The thing that was supposed to have started the Vietnam War.
Not the Bay of Pigs, you mean?
Not the Bay of Pigs, no. It was something like, I can't remember the name of it anyway.
Right.
I should probably look for the tweet while we're doing this. But he basically listed a whole bunch of things that had caused wars in the past, which were fake news, effectively.
Okay.
And he said, to add that, and add to that, Iran shooting down the Ukrainian Airlines plane. Right. And of course, about a day later, the Iranians came out and actually admitted that they had shot it down.
So he was saying that they hadn't.
He was saying that they hadn't.
Right.
And that it was all American propaganda.
Yeah.
So he was then taken to task by lots of people on Twitter who basically said, you know, just to prove that you are a conspiracy nut, that you've never had the truth and never had a good relationship with the truth. The reason I'm asking you about it is because John Pilger was one of the guys that Piers rehired.
Yeah, he did.
Because he'd worked for the Mirror years before, hadn't he?
Yeah. And
to write these incredibly long, tedious pieces.
Very tedious,
which couldn't ever be edited, I was
And not, not particularly well written,
no,
I have to say.
Because I remember, I think I was in Scotland, I think, and we would occasionally, you know, sort of chuck it out on the grounds that it was one, too long, and
it
two, we
crap.
Leave the space for somebody else, and three, it was crap, But, I mean, did you have any dealings with it?
Never, no. I think it went through the news desk.
Did it?
Because the news desk We're very keen to start this kind of new serious Mirror because it, you know, it suited. You remember Connor? Connor was very sort of serious and politically up to speed, and Richard Wallace was likewise. I think, you know, although Dickie's always
Dickie was
a bit of a chameleon.
He was more of a whichever way the wind's blowing.
In a good way.
Yeah.
I think. But Connor had had the contact with Pilger, but also Christopher Hitchens, who came to the Mirror and wrote some unbelievably obtuse columns, you know, with references to Greek mythology and stuff like this, that even we had to look it up, you know, so God knows what the readers were making of it. So,
this was during the period when they'd lost the red top and it had all gone sort of black.
That's
right. Nobody was quite sure what was happening.
I don't know what triggered Piers's desire to get more serious, except to say that it worked for a while. You know, we got a lot more attention and the sales went up. But then the big mistake was made when we went, Britain went into war against Iraq, and we carried on saying this is terrible.
Also, the difficulty became just design-wise, that because it became this kind of picture front page lead paper.
That's right.
You'd sometimes have days when there wasn't really a big enough story to do
no,
that with.
So you had to manufacture,
Some kind of, you know, outrage, like sort of tombstone type piece.
That's right.
And a big front page picture that was very, very impressive.
Right.
And the story was crap. I found Pilger's tweet, by the way.
Go on.
Here it is. Lie upon lie. Hiroshima necessary to defeat Japan. Vietnam attacked US ships in Gulf of Tonkin. That was the one. Saddam Hussein had WMDs. Libya invaded to prevent massacre. Russia shot down MH17. Put Trump in the White House. The US, not Russia, defeated ISIS. And Iran shot down... Add Iran shot down Ukrainian airliner.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, it's a whole litany.
He's making himself a hostage to fortune.
Well, he is. And, I mean, to be fair to him, he admitted that he'd made a mistake.
Yeah.
However, he then went on to say, but it doesn't actually diminish my point. And you go, well,
it sort of does, mate.
It kind of does, actually, because your entire premise is that this was a story that the Americans made up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, it may have even been the Americans that shot the plane down.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It wasn't then.
Yeah.
It was the Iranians.
Yeah.
I found that very interesting, actually, because Iran has totally kowtowed now to Trump.
Has won. Someone's on
he's
there.
He's won.
Who was it? Was it Nick Robinson or someone on the Today programme yesterday was saying, you know, you've got to say, you get stuff done.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were promised World War III, and what we've actually got is a very supplicant Iran, and he's got his win. You know, he's killed this nasty guy.
Well, I mean, if you look at every single piece of sort of foreign policy that he's got himself engaged in, from North Korea to Russia to now Iran, he's doing pretty well, isn't
he? So I woke up this morning, right, not a word of a lie, and I sat there making myself a coffee, and I thought, what if we're all wrong? And by we, I meant the sort of liberal, sort of centre-left.
You mean?
What if we are completely wrong?
Well, guess what? No, it's not what if, right? It's when are you going to work this out, right?
Well, I mean, look, I just thought it was worth asking the question, what if every assumption I make that, you know, that the progressive left is generally a positive thing, that globalization's a positive thing, that, you know, the more we mingle, the better and more peaceful we are. All of those, what if all of those things are just completely wrong?
Well, I think you might be onto something finally. You know, why don't you start a new newspaper, you know, and call it The New Optimist, right?
Yeah, which The Blind Optimist.
Yeah, The Blind Optimist. Because actually, human nature is not about what you might call being progressively left-wing.
Yeah.
Human nature is not like that at all. There's something very nice about human nature, but its best way, its best kind of, I think, its best practice, if you like, is for people to be encouraged to do as well as they can do, and to do it in a beneficial way for society, rather than punishing those people who do well, telling them that they're evil and twisted and nasty and horrible, and they've got way too much money and they need to give some of it back to the government, so the government can give it to the poor people. That's not human nature, and I think it's counterintuitive to the way society should work.
Why do you explain something that's always confused me? Is the massive spirit of altruism and philanthropy in the States amongst very rich people, where it's expected that you'll give a lot back. You know, if you're a multi-billionaire in the States and you're not giving huge amounts away to charities, people think there's something very, very wrong.
Yes.
But over here, not so much, you know.
Well, I think there is that here as well, but I just think that America is such a much more kind of open society.
Yeah.
The problem we've got in this country, I think, is that we've always been riven by class.
Yeah.
And I think we still are.
Yeah.
Snobbery. Yeah. There's not much snobbery in America, you know.
No.
And I've been with people there who don't have much money, and I've been with people who do have a lot of money. And the people who don't have money don't resent the ones that
That's
do.
Right. Yeah. They applaud them.
They applaud them.
Yeah.
You know, I used to say this when I first went to live there in the 80s, you know, and I'd get talking to people, you know, when I started to make a bit of money. And I would say to them, you know, if you've got a night, because this was in the 80s, right, and there was a lot of, you know, rich versus poor kind of stuff going on. And I said, you know, if I had a posh car in London, somebody would run a key alongside of it because they'd be jealous of the fact I had a nice car. That doesn't happen in America, you know, because they want to be better off.
Yeah.
They aspire to it. And I think part of the reason for that is that they've always been much more free of tax than we are,
right?
You know, and I know that people will say, oh, there's a lot of European countries where they tax people more and they seem happy enough.
Mm.
Maybe so. Mm. But as far as the Anglo-Saxon kind of heritage goes,
right,
I think we are, generally speaking, much more likely to be happy if we're taxed less.
Yeah.
And Americans get to do more with their money. You know, they get to save their money. And in the old days, it was always, oh, we get free education. We don't have to save up for it. Now we don't anymore. So you now have to save up for your kids' education. They've always done that in America.
Yeah.
In the same way, they've always paid for their own healthcare.
And if you don't, and in even in this country, if you don't want to wait for 8 hours in A&E or whatever, or get cancer treatment quickly, you've got to go private now because the NHS is so screwed.
Exactly. But the difference is that we are still taxed very highly.
Yeah.
And we don't have all that money to do with what we want.
Yeah.
Whereas I think over there, if you are very wealthy, because you've got more money and you get to keep more money, and also you're not, I mean, somebody once told me this with regards to women. If your wife or your girlfriend keeps telling you you're a scumbag and you're a cheat and you're a bastard and all of that, which occasionally I've been accused of, right? basically, you start to think you are one.
But it's not necessarily untrue.
Well, whether it's true or not, the point is if that's all you hear, then you become more
that
like
becomes
that
your
person.
Definition, yeah.
So if you're a rich person in this country, you're going to get more resentful of giving people money because you're going, well, they all think I'm a scumbag anyway. Why should I fucking give them any money?
I think you're right.
And when you look at Alan Sugar, you remember that great picture that he put out once when somebody accused him of being some kind of rich scumbag, and he put out his tax check.
That's right,
yes. It was something like 58 million quid or something that he paid to the Treasury.
That's right.
And he said, well, when you've paid this much maybe you can have a say.
That's right.
And in the States, of course, you know, because they're told that they've done very well and people admire them, they'll give money away.
Yeah.
I think there's something to that.
I think you're probably right. And I tell you, I heard you were speaking earlier about the openness of the States and the lack of class barriers.
Yeah.
I heard the most fascinating thing on the TV. Monty Don, right?
Yes.
The gardening show. And he's gone to the States, right? And he's doing American gardens.
Oh,
right?
Is he?
So I'm into all of that. Right. I love it. And I think he's brilliant.
They're all, his show, the gardening shows are always on in our house. I'm not necessarily sure why. But I do watch it. I do watch it.
But he's great, I think. Really good. But he said, he asked this question to this this house owner in this nice, posh suburb of Philadelphia, I think it was. And he until he asked it, it never occurred to me. But he said, why are there never any fences on people's front gardens in the States?
Yeah.
He said, in the UK, everything is fenced. But in the US, there are no fences. The lawn runs down to the pavement, to the
road,
sidewalk.
Yeah.
And this guy said it's because we've got a different viewpoint on property, and it's very hard to get people to fence things in the States, you know, because they think it's all so expansive and land is bigger. And also, he said if somebody put a fence up in the States, people would think they were like a reclusive weirdo.
Yeah.
You know, they would think there was something wrong.
Yeah.
And ever since he said that, I've been walking down our streets. Right? Yeah. I live in a sort of typical Victorian terraced street in Highbury, right? Very nice. But we've all got about 6 foot of space between us and the bay window and the pavement.
Yeah.
And inevitably, there's a massive big hedge and then some bins behind the hedge.
Yeah.
And you just think, how much nicer would the street look if you took all of those hedges and all of those little walls away? And the street would widen up. Everyone would be able to see everything. So you couldn't have burglars hiding behind the hedge and stuff like this.
Right.
And it would just open everything up. But there's something very British, I think, about closing things down.
No, I think that's true. Well, also, my American friends, when they would come and visit us when we lived in Wiltshire, were aghast at the way that Britain was kind of laid out. They go, we've just come down on the train, right? And all we see is fields, right? You've just picked us up in a car. We've now driven through loads and loads of fields. And now we've reached a place where all the houses are stuck next to each other.
That's right.
Right?
That's
like
right.
Literally wedged up against each other for a period of about sort of, you know, a quarter of a mile. That was our village. And then it's all fields again.
Yeah.
And they go, why'd you do it like that?
You're
I'm like,
mad.
I don't know. Yeah. This is the way it's always been
done.
It's
true.
But it's the same in they've got a different view of the beach as well over there.
Yeah.
Because my sister lives quite near the Long Island Sound, and it's beautiful, you know, gorgeous. But you can't get access to beaches there in the same way as you can in this country. Because in this country, the beach is basically public.
Yeah.
Over there, you can buy property which takes you all the way down to the water.
Oh, I see.
And so basically, famously, for example, Ron Galella, who was the original kind of paparazzi photographer, he made his first fortune taking pictures of the Kennedys. But he couldn't take pictures of the Kennedys from the land, so he basically bought a boat,
right,
and put a spy hole in the boat, and he basically hooked anchored it off of Cape Kennedy, or Cape Cod rather, and just took loads of pictures of them on their private beach,
right,
and that was the only way he could get them because you can't be
on the
beach.
Set foot
on
the beach.
I remember the line was always told to me when I was in the days when I was a reporter: if you stand in the water, you're okay, but if you walk onto the beach, you're on private land and they can shoot you.
I'll never forget coming down to London for the first time and driving down or for, not for the first time, but for the as an independent adult.
Yeah, yeah.
And driving down off the M. What is
M1,
it? The M1 into...
Coming into Brent Cross.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And then, so you come off and you go into three very fast lanes of traffic and people roaring down.
The North Circular Road.
But there are houses, cheek by jowl, all the way along there. Right. And I just thought, bloody hell, they live next to motorways down here.
Yeah.
It's madness.
I know. Well, funnily enough, I was going up to Scotland the other week, and we were on part of the M6, I think, or must have been quite far north up the M6, like north of Warrington.
Yeah.
And we suddenly hit a bit of the road. It was really quiet. Because you know how the roads are quite noisy here?
Yeah,
and
yes.
There's that terrible bit of the M25 where you think you've got some kind of buzzing noise. Yeah.
your wheel's about to fall off.
Where you're
off.
Going towards, like, Chertsey, somewhere around there. Yeah. So suddenly there was no noise at all. And it wasn't just because I was driving an incredibly luxurious Range Rover. I don't know if I've mentioned that before. I've got the bloody windscreen sorted out finally, by the way.
Oh, thank God for that. I was worried about that.
But I looked to my left, right, and there was a new development of houses. And they probably built about 100 houses. Quite nice looking, kind of probably 2-3 bedroom type places.
Yeah.
And suddenly the mother of my children said to me, she said, well, that's probably why they've got this quiet road, because they've been built...
For noise reduction?
For noise reduction.
Very interesting.
Which I thought, now that's quite clever.
Very interesting.
And very un-British, because we're not very good at stuff like that.
Well,
and I thought, well, this is actually really good. So now they're living in, next to motorways up north as well.
Well, that's brilliant. My in-laws up in Scotland near Aberdeen, they've just had this fantastic new bypass built, which has taken all the traffic out of their village. And the road is super quiet, except it's got a bridge, right? It dips down, it's got a bridge, and then it goes over a hill. And on either side of the bridge is one of those sort of metal, you know, where they detach it for when it expands during the summer and come back. So it's like sort of two strips of metal and a bit of rubber where the road doesn't quite join up.
Mm.
And every car that goes over it, it goes bubum, bubum, bubum.
Right.
And that all they can hear now is this.
God.
And I said, have they sorted that out yet? And they said, well, no, everyone's just trying to get used to it.
Really?
Like the air is just full of bubum. Bubble.
Yeah, that could drive
it would
you
drive
insane.
Me nuts.
That could drive you
like
insane.
Like Chinese water torture.
Yeah. Oh. I once had a guy, my next door neighbour, and it was when I used to work at weekends and I used to work at the overnight show, so I'd get home at about 7 in the morning, have a little bit of breakfast or something. Sometimes I'd have a glass of wine because to me it was dinner time, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd go for a little sleep. Some guy next door had obviously decided, you know those, that laminate flooring you get in IKEA?
Yeah.
You know, and you have to, it's like tongue and groove.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just like,
oh no. Above your head?
No, behind my bedroom wall.
Oh, no.
Because it was literally the next room over.
Oh, shit.
It's like that. And I just was like, I tried to sleep, couldn't
Terrible.
Sleep. Couldn't do anything. I ended up going out.
Drives you mad.
Yeah, because he was doing it. And I couldn't complain. It was Saturday morning or something, you know. And I thought, well, I can't say you can't do that on a Saturday morning. I'm trying to sleep.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about the time that I was... I did a couple of test shows on LBC. Right?
Oh, I think you did tell me. Well, you told me you were doing that.
So
I
was doing it, and it was like the sort of 1 till 4 in the morning shift. Right. So it was the graveyard shift.
Yeah.
And I thought they went very well.
I know, I've done it,
They never called back, though, anyway, so it can't have gone that well. But I had a bit of flu, and the family were on holiday in Norfolk, so it was a big deal. So I drove back to London for the weekend to do these two things. And my... son has got a gecko, right? A crested, crested gecko, and this thing will eat crickets,
right?
Now, if you go into
so
a pet shop,
live,
yeah,
yeah.
So, well, I think it probably eat dead ones, but it likes the live ones.
Right.
If you go into a Pets R Us or whatever they're called, there are two types of cricket. One is sort of white, and one is brown.
Okay.
Right? So I didn't realise that there was any real difference. So I got the brown ones now. The fundamental differences is that the white ones are sort of genetically made so they don't make that cricket noise, right? Not so much the brown ones, right? And Theo, his cage, this gecko cage, had a little gap in it, right? So I put 3 or 4 of these crickets in the cage, right, to treat the gecko, and a couple of them got out, right? So I'm trying to sleep. So I do this show in the dark hours of the morning, and in our cellar, right, comes this noise. You know, whatever, the screech of a cricket, the high-pitched
like
screech.
Kind of, you know that sound you hear in America, that kind of, you know, like, it's almost like
Yes, it's like
it's
somebody's...
Because they're rubbing
their legs together. It's someone scraping nails down. I mean, it's the worst sound in the world, and it's impossible to sleep.
I don't mind it when I'm in America.
Listen, it gets worse, this is an admission.
Hey.
Right, so next thing,
not your Jolyon Moore moment,
no,
is it?
No, the next thing I hear, this is in the middle of the summer last year, right, is I can hear one in the hedge outside the front of the house, Christ. Right? And it goes on all night long, right?
Bloody hell.
And the neighbours are up and everyone... You know, you can hear it from about 50 yards.
Well, surely you could have just said that it wasn't anything to do with you.
No,
somehow
well, of course. This is, no one knows it's anything to do with me unless they listen to the Thought Police. But by the end of the week, these bloody things have mated and everything.
Oh,
and
Christ.
The whole street is... It wasn't until November and we got a frost and it killed them all off, thank Christ.
Jesus.
Oh, no, it went
so
on...
So you could have actually populated Britain with these things.
Mate, honestly, yeah. It's probably
that's
an arrestable offence. Yeah.
Well, it's like the what do you call it? The parakeets. The yellow parakeets that are all over London now.
Green.
Because somebody...
Well, the story is...
Yeah, well, it's funny...
Jimi Hendrix, wasn't it?
Well, no, that's apparently... That's an
is
urban
that a load
myth.
Of rubbish?
That's
yeah.
an urban
yeah.
myth, yeah. It turns out that they came from somebody who had them in like Kew Gardens or somewhere,
right.
like, and they got out of there.
Right.
And also, they do breed quite.
I like them, though, don't you? I prefer them to
pigeons. Well, I've only ever seen them once because they're mostly in West London. I was once driving on the Westway near Shepherd's Bush, and they all flew across the front of my car.
Right.
And that was the only one and only time I've seen
them. Well, there's loads in Clissold Park in Stoke Newington.
Is there?
Loads
well,
of them,
I don't
yeah.
go to Stoke Newington. It's too trendy.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be seen dead there, as it were. Now, we're out of time already.
Oh, no.
So, coming up at the end of the week, I'm going to tell you about the... I'll give you an update on the Christmas tree.
Oh, how is it? Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Well, I'll show you the picture. You'll see. You'll see. I told you you'd be eating your words.
And I hope you found that worm that can that turns into two worms when you cut it in half.
We shall see. This is the Thought Police.
You can't get a job, apparently, in Canada if you're not bilingual.
Well, what's he going to get a job doing? I mean, what job could he do?
Well, he could be begging for voiceover work for himself, like he was with Bob Iger.
Yeah, he could ring up that guy from Disney and go, do you know when we did that deal to get Megan some voiceover work?
Yeah.
How do you fancy
that was
giving
mortifying,
it to me?
Wasn't
that the most embarrassing thing you've ever seen?
It was... I'll tell you, the thing about it that mortified me was the bit where he sort of leaned back and said, oh, you sound surprised.
Yeah.
Like, everyone gives a toss about what his wife does.
I know. Meanwhile, she's over to the right talking to Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Jay-Z looks bored as shit.
Do you think she was saying to them, hey, do you know my husband, he plays a bit of guitar?
Yeah.
You know, do you think you get a spot in the band?
Backing vocals.
Yeah.
Jay-Z, I thought, I love Jay-Z. I think he's an absolute diamond. And he just looked completely pissed off at the fact that he was there.
Why don't you start a new newspaper, you know, and call it The New Optimist, right?
Yeah, which The Blind Optimist.
Yeah, The Blind Optimist. Because actually, human nature is not about what you might call being progressively left-wing.
Yeah.
Human nature is not like that at all. There's something very nice about human nature, but its best way, its best kind of, I think, its best practice, if you like, is for people to be encouraged to do as well as they can do, and to do it in a beneficial way for society, rather than punishing those people who do well, telling them that they're evil and twisted and nasty and horrible, and they've got way too much money and they need to give some of it back to the government so the government can give it to the poor people. That's not human nature.
No.
And I think it's counterintuitive to the way society should work.
How brilliant would it be if the entire British monarchy fell to pieces because Meghan Markle once blanked Piers at a party.
Well,
and he's got
that
the hump.
Would be his favourite situation of all time, wouldn't it?